You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo. And oh man, I gotta tell you something. You know, let's be honest with you, and my author friend, Erica Anderson, wrote about this. You know, things are moving at an accelerated pace, all right? When I was growing up, all right, I can remember actually a day when, you know, there was like three channels and PBS, okay? That's what I kind of can remember, all right? And then what happens is, as we go, there was no Google. Do you know what Google was? Yeah, I love what she says here. She says, you know what Google was? Google was the World Book. Wow. Why you people are out there going World Book? What in the wide world of sports, Jay, is the World Book? We got an update every year on our Google. We did, and I remember I had the Britannicas. That was my Google. That was Erica's Google when we were growing up. Oh man, things are moving at a pace. And if you own a business, and I know that so many of you do own a business that listen to this show, and that you're founders, you're owners of a business at whatever level, you're CEOs of business, you're in the C-suite, you know this as well as I do, that change is coming at us so fast. And you know what? How do you make that change? How do you make that change? And hold, listen. Right? Because, you know, Eric and I talked about this before we got on. You know what the truth is that you're probably making changes like every other business is making changes. It's like, okay, we got to make a change. And then you dictate what that change is going to be. And you're not thinking about your people. You're not thinking how you're going to truly lead that change. And you're not thinking about the systems and the culture that are involved in your organization, how that's affected. Guess what? Erica Anderson's going to help you get through all that. And that's going to be beautiful. I'm telling you, it's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. You're going to love her. I promise you, you will. I really do. I promise you will. She's great. But before we get to her, let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life. Truth of the matter is we are four-part people, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. And here's the thing. If we are not working on all four of those areas every day, you know what the truth is? You can't stay static. You're either growing or you're dying. We never stay the same. Listen, Erica says it over and over again. Listen, it's changing too fast. If you sit and decide we are here and we don't have to change anymore, guess what? Your business is probably dead. The same thing is true with us. If we're not working on ourselves in these four areas, it passes us by that quick in the snap of my fingers. It's really that true. So let's talk about how we can be training every day. And let's talk about you. And your training, right? On a scale, we go through scale of 1 to 10. 1, my training is just, ugh, you know, and then 10, my training is awesome. Can't be any better, right? And so what are we looking at? Well, we're looking at this, like physically, you know, how's your exercise regimen? How are you eating right? Are you getting enough water? Are you getting enough sleep? If you were to rate yourself out there on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give yourself on that scale? 5 being average, right? Okay, hold on. Don't panic. You say, well, Jay, I'm a 2. It's okay if you're a 2. Right? That's our starting place, right? What we want to do if you're a 2 is we want to go, okay, how do we get to a 2.5? What can I change right now to get myself to a 2.5? That's what's important here, right? Not what the number is, it's what are you right now, and then what can we do to change that? And you say, well, I'm an 8. Good for you. Can you get to an 8.25? Well, right? Because you know what? The truth is we should always be improving regardless of what our number is, right? All right, so there's your physical number. That's the first one. Second one is the mental number, right? My wife likes to say to me, she says, you know, Jay, you got to tell them, don't be a mental loafer. You know, you can't just sit in front of your TV and let things come at you. You have got to be active. Do you know, here's the thing that I love about this book that Erica wrote. You know what she says? She says, look, you know what? It's one thing to have a mindset shift, right? It's one thing, but you know what? You've got to take action. The same thing, you got to have the behaviors. Once you get the mindset shift, you have to have the behaviors. So what are the behaviors that you're doing to actively grow in your knowledge and understanding of what you do, what you want to become? Are you reading great books like this one, right? Change from the inside out, right? Or maybe you're taking up a new instrument and learning a new instrument. That affects both halves of your brain. Learning a new foreign language, that works on both halves of your brain, right? Whatever it is, what are you doing to actively grow mentally, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing out there? 5 being average, right? That's your second number. Third number is emotionally, right? And listen, emotions are emotions. We all have them. And you know what? You can deny that you have them, but the truth of the matter is we all have them. We don't necessarily all express them exactly the same, but we do have them inside. And, you know, there's two parts of the emotional piece that we want to evaluate on our scale of 1 to 10. The first piece is how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure, right? That's self-control, right? Because the truth of the matter is, I don't know about you, but the last few years or a couple years or so, we've been in this thing called a pandemic. And if you have not been under stress and pressure, then you've probably not been living. And I don't know how you've done that for the last 2 years, but okay. But the truth of the matter is it's been a lot of stress and pressure. Have you been able to control it? The reason why that is so important to be able to control your emotions is because when you get out of control, you're no longer able to make the changes that you need to make in your life. Because what happens is your right side of your brain is so fired up that your left brain cannot make reasonable decisions. Your left side can't connect, all right? So that's first half of the second half of this. How well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of others? This is the beautiful thing about what Erica writes in her book. Because you see, it's not just about controlling your emotions, which you need to do, but how well are you able to understand the emotions of the individuals in your business that are undergoing change? Because see, it's really, really important that if you want to have great change, that you have to understand, you know what, there's some endings and there's some beginnings, and that emotionally affects them. Their journey on their mind shift arc is going to be very different, and it can be very emotional. Are you able to help them change, right? Part of that is understanding where they're at emotionally. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you evaluate yourself emotionally? And then finally, the fourth area, the spiritual area. And you know what? Look, we're all faith-based people, right? I know that sounds weird, but we really are. The truth of the matter is, you went to bed last night, you didn't know for sure if you could get up, but we kind of believe that we do, right? We kind of believe that we're going to get up. We kind of believe that we're going to see the sun tomorrow, right, when we get up. You know, that's kind of why we roll. We make plans for the future, believing that those plans are going to come into being. That's that we're faith-based people. That's what we do. There's another element to that is, you know, the truth is when things go south or go bad for us, we run to something to help us bring us back to homeostasis, or as she says, or center, right? What is that for you? Because whatever that is for you, that's your God, right? Because you believe that that's going to bring you back to homeostasis. That's what you have faith in, that whatever I run to is going to do that. Now, for some people, it's God. For some people, it's meditation. For some people, it's nature. For whatever it may be for you, the truth of the matter is, I ask you these questions. Is it working? And what do you need to do to change it? And how would you evaluate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 when it comes to that? Right? And you know what? Those four areas are like the legs of a chair. If the legs of the chair are uneven, what happens to your posture over the course of time? It gets out of whack and you're out of whack. And at the same time, if the chair is too low, you can't sit at a normal table and eat. And speaking of someone who has her legs of the chair all at the right height, her name is Erica Anderson. She is the founding partner of Proteus International, which is a coaching and consulting training firm that helps client organizations clarify and move toward their hoped for future, right? So she has served as a coach and advisor to such companies like MTV Networks, GE, Rockwell Automation, NBC Universal, Spotify, Amazon, Spectrum, Novartis, Revolt Media, CBS Sports, Yale School of Public, you may have heard of those. She's an international speaker, she's great, and has been featured in business publications like Harvard Business Review, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Fortune, and Investor's Business Daily. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome her to the show, and welcome for the first time to A New Direction, Erica Anderson. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you, and gosh, it was really fun listening to your four-part help for your folks. That was great. I was following right along there.
Well, let me ask you, how did you do?
Really well. Good. I agree with you, absolutely. You know, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And I feel like I attend pretty well to all four of those things. So that was great.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, that's awesome. Well, I, you know, I kind of, you know, after I read your book, I was kind of like going, well, you know what? She has to be in a pretty good place because you really do address really pretty much all of these things. Yes. Throughout the course of your book. So let's just dig right into it. Truth is, we are moving at an accelerated pace in this world. Yeah. And that once we got to the 60s, as you mentioned into the introduction of the book, once we got to the 1960s and beyond, all of a sudden the technological pace has increased. And as we all know, once you buy a piece of technology off the shelf, it's pretty much obsolete by the time you get there. So businesses, and of course we just had the pandemic, and we've had to learn how to pivot, and we've had to learn how to change. And yeah. We all know that we, as you point out, we prefer to be stable. And so we want homeostasis, but it sometimes it serves us well and sometimes it doesn't, does it?
Yeah. Yes. In fact, just to step back for a minute and contextualize, I think this might be helpful for our listeners and watchers. You know, when I write a book, it's, and I'm sure you as an author can relate to this, it's because I get curious about something and I want to really dig into it. And so, you know, at Proteus, we've had a change practice for over a decade. We've been working with change for a long time. And yet the two things I got curious about as we helped various, you know, leaders and their organizations, the first thing I got curious about and wanted to answer was, why is change so hard for us? You know, because for most of it is, there's some people, you know, they like change. Okay. But most of us, it's hard, especially when it comes at us with change that's imposed on us. So I wanted to answer that question. And then the second question I wanted to answer, as you know, is what actually happens inside an individual human person when we go through a change? And so that was the genesis of this book. And as you know, I spend the first couple of chapters, three or four chapters, kind of helping sort through that. Why is it hard and how do we actually go through change? Because I figured if I answered those questions, it would be really helpful for people. Because those are big questions that I don't think have been well answered necessarily.
They're not well answered. You're absolutely right. They're not well answered about how we go through change. And I think it's really, I think it's important that we address that. And I think what you have done here in Change from the Inside Out is you kind of help us start, I think, at the very basic human level, right?
Yes.
We, individually.
Individual human level. So I'd love to, if you don't mind, to talk about what I found out about why change is hard.
Please.
It'll resonate for people, and it was helpful for me to find out, and then I hope it's helpful for other people. So I started by looking at history because we are, you know, what we've come from. And it occurred to me as I was thinking about this a few years ago when I started working on the book that if you think about a person 100 or 200 or 500 years ago, anywhere in the world, really, that person's life would have been almost unimaginably stable to us. Mm. Think about it. Somebody grows up in Philadelphia 200 years ago. They probably grew up exactly where their parents grew up. They probably did the same work that their parents did. They probably ate the same food and went to the same church and did that their whole lives. And even the changes that came, for the most part, were pretty predictable. Somebody has a baby, somebody dies, somebody gets sick, somebody's bad year for crop. You know, just it's very predictable. So that when a real change came 200 or 500 or 1,000 years ago, it was almost always a threat and a danger.
Mm.
A flood or a famine,
right,
or a war, right?
Right.
And so we're wired, you think of all those ancestors of ours, we're wired until the last couple of generations to think, okay, good is stable and predictable.
Right.
And bad is big change. And the best bet is almost always going to be what you mentioned, that homeostatic urge to come back to the previous known. It's like, let's get back to where we were before. So when change didn't happen very often, and when it was generally bad, that did serve us. Let's go back to how it was before the famine, right? Before the war, before the flood.
Before the pandemic.
Before the pandemic. And so we're wired to think, let's go back to exactly the way it was before the pandemic. But as we know, that's not going to happen. It's keeping going. And so, you know, I used, as you said, the example at the beginning of the book about the World Book Encyclopedia, that was our Google. And people either had World Book or Britannica, and you had it, and that was how the world was. And once a year, you got this slender little update volume. That's kind of how slow everything was, right? It was stately. And then think about since then. Now, you know, someone estimated recently that world knowledge doubles every year.
Wow.
World knowledge those doubles every year. So that's what we're in now. And we're just not prepared. We're not, we're not wired for this, right? So we have to rewire ourselves. And that's why I then thought, okay, well then if we're going to rewire ourselves, we have to really understand how we're wired. So let's get clear about what happens when we actually do go through a change so we can replicate that, you know, so we can get better at it. So that's where I came up with the change arc, which I know you like. Should we talk about that?
I'd love, well, I think yes, because, you know, it's let the rewiring begin. it's something that you talk about. But I mean, let's talk about the change arc, because I don't think that we could talk about changing any organization until we understand the change arc, which I kind of actually is funny. I didn't put it together until I was talking through the intro to the show that in reality, what I'm trying to do that, help people get through that without realizing it.
100%. And in fact, that's what I love when I come to something that is true, regardless of whether or not I know it. You know what I mean? Right. Neil deGrasse Tyson once said, science is the stuff that's true, whether or not you believe in it. Right. So I feel like I kind of uncovered the change arc and that it's really accurate. So here for our listeners, here's what it is. So what I understood is that when a change is imposed upon us, when somebody says you have to change in these ways, the first thing that happens, and we call this proposed change, is we want to know some things about the change. And it's really predictable. Almost always, people want to know these three things. They want to know, what does this mean for me? Literally, what am I going to have to do differently? You know, that's the first thing they want to know. Second thing is people want to know, why is this happening? Because we generally have such a preference for the status quo, it's like, give me a really good reason to change, right? So why is this happening? Why do I even need to consider this? And then the third thing we want to know is, what will it look like when it's done? What is the proposed future going to be? You know, and it's so interesting, Jay, when I was researching this book, I discovered that there are a lot of psychologists now who believe that fear of the unknown is our deepest fear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Our history of having the known, wanting the known. So if somebody says we're going to change in this way and they don't give you any kind of an understanding of what that post-change future will be, that's terrifying. So that's the third thing we want answered. Okay, so we start trying to gather this information. And it's really interesting to think about that in an organizational context, because you know, so often when an organizational change happens, it's just like, here's what's going on, get with the program. And there's none of that, what does it mean for you? Why is it happening? What will it look like when it's done? Which makes people even more nervous, right, and concerned. So then as we're gathering this information, because change historically has mostly been bad for us, we start out with this, it's kind of like a negative confirmation bias. We start out with this negative expectation. We expect that, even as we're asking these questions about it, that the change is going to be difficult and costly and weird.
Yeah.
And difficult means I don't know how to do this and it's going to be hard and there are going to be obstacles and people are going to get in the way. We think of all these ways it's going to be difficult. Costly means it's going to take from me things I value, right? Making this change. And it might be simple things like time or money, but it's more likely to be really intrinsic things like identity and reputation and power and clarity and all these things that I love. It's going to like when people say, oh, I'll feel like such an idiot. What that means is this change will take away my power. It will take away my reputation. It will take away my clarity. Right. So we assume it's going to cost us all these things. And then weird just means strange. It's like, oh, that's not how that's not how we operate around here. So we have this negative assumption, right? And then this mindset shift. And when I figured this out, Jay, I'm like, ooh, this is really the beating heart of it. We noticed that when people make a change, it's generally not because the external circumstances around the change have changed much. It's just that they start thinking about it differently. And you know, what people think kind of comes out their mouth. So what people start thinking and saying is, well, I guess I could do this. I guess I could see how this could be easy or at least doable versus difficult, right? Oh, I can see how this could be rewarding. I can see how it could benefit me more than it costs, more rewarding than costly. And, you know, I guess I can see how this could become the way we do things around here. And that becoming normal, that really depends on, so we look around and we see if other people that we like and think of as being like us are doing the thing. And we look to see if people we admire and want to emulate, e.g. our leaders, are doing the thing, which is why it's so important for leaders to model a change. So once someone starts thinking that a change could be, versus difficult, costly, and weird, could be easy or at least doable, rewarding, and normal, then and only then do they start being willing to learn and do the new behaviors that the change requires, and then the change can actually occur and be adopted. So when we understood this, we thought, aha, you know, whether it's one person trying to change or an organization trying to do some huge transformation effort that affects thousands of people, the key is helping as many people as possible to go through that interior mindset shift so they start to think, oh, I can see how this could work. I could see how this could be easy and more rewarding than costly and more normal than weird. And then all starts to move forward.
You know, the interesting part of that whole scenario is, and a takeaway for me when I read through it and I kept thinking through it over and over again, and I heard you say it again, you know, we do look for verification from other people, right? It is so important for us to see other people. Can we look at someone else and go, okay, are they okay with it? Are they all right? Cause they seem like they're okay.
And, yes.
And then, exactly. Right. And then at the same time, we're looking, okay, they're okay. All right. And then this is the integrity part of the leadership piece, right? Is leadership being consistent, right? Because they can't waffle. Totally. Right. Because if once they start waffling, then we all start getting a little bit, I'm not so sure. Right.
100%. And there's a picture in the book, as you know, of people. I talk about the organization as the bridge to the future and a change. And in the picture, there's some leaders literally walking across the bridge before their people. So, you know, I think everyone who's ever worked in an organization has had the experience of having a leader say, we have to make this change. And then they are literally not doing it. And that's, then everybody goes, okay, I believe what you're doing more than I believe what you're saying. I'm not going to make this change, right?
Right. And this is the problem with mind shift. This is all part of, because it's not, I think what we want to do is we want to blame the person for not shifting their mind on their own. It really does require others to kind of help us make this shift. And I love what you said. We kind of have to get to neutral, right?
Yes.
Before we get to... Yeah. To some sort of change.
That's exactly right, Jay. And it's funny, you know, when we came up with this term of art, change capable, which I love and use all the time now, we came up with this about 3 years ago. I started out thinking maybe the term was change positive, but then that's not right, because not all change is good. And it's right. Not necessary that you be change positive. It's just necessary that you be neutral about a change. When a change comes at you, rather than immediately going, oh my gosh, this is going to be difficult, costly, and weird. You go, wait, hold up. I don't know yet. Let me see how difficult or easy, how costly or rewarding, how weird or not. Let's just see. So to get yourself into that neutral mindset, or as a leader, to help your people get into that neutral mindset about change is the first order of business. And man, if you can do that, you're just well along toward having the change be successful.
Her name is Erica Anderson. I told you she was terrific. I told you she's just knocking it out of the park. Her book, Change from the Inside Out, Making You, Your Team, and Your Organization Change Capable. It's fantastic. You're listening to her here on A New Direction. Folks, I got two great sponsors. One of them is Epic Physical Therapy. They are my physical therapist, but not just mine. Lots of people go see them, including professional athletes. The reason why is because they create customized treatment programs for you to meet your goals. Look, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, go to no other place but go to Epic Physical Therapy. You can learn more by going to epicpt.com. That's epicpt.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. For more than 35 years, she's been serving the world. And how does she do that? How does she serve the world? Well, it's really pretty easy. She has a worldwide presence. She has one of the top websites that you will ever see. It is absolutely complete. And the truth of the matter is, since she is independently owned and unaffiliated with any national company, she's able to know the best professional in your area, because it's not about the company. It is about the best professional. So listen, when you're ready to sell your home, buy your home, regardless what the market is, start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction and with Erica Anderson, and she's been fabulous. I love talking about change and change arcs and the thing that she's created there. It's beautiful, and we've had a really great opening here. So let's talk about moving right along, right? Let's talk about change here, right? You talk about proposed change, being able to personally connect with the proposed change. Then you talk about clarifying change. And then you talk about defining the need for change and envisioning the future state. Can we put that all together in such a way that we can kind of maybe make sense of that in terms of mind shift and how we have to start thinking about change? Is that the right direction we should go, or am I asking the wrong question there?
Two directions. We could go down that. It's so fun to talk to you because you're so flexible. We could go down the path of how do I, as a leader, help an individual person go through.
Let's
a specific
do that.
We could talk about, okay. So, and then we'll talk about the model for helping a whole organization go through change, which is just really writ large. Okay. So if you are a leader of your own business or a business with one other person or a huge business, and you know that you want to help people go through that mindset shift, The we've come up with these things that we call change levers. I really love them. Change levers in the sense of force multipliers. My business partner, Jeff, came up with them about almost 15 years ago. They're so great. So if you're, as a leader, trying to help people through that mindset shift so that they can see the possibilities of the change, they can see it as potentially being easy and rewarding and normal. The first lever that you have is increase understanding. And what that means is give people all the context, all the rationale, all the surrounding information about the change that you can, and specifically answer those three questions that everybody has. What is this going to mean for you? Why is it happening? What will it look like when it's done? So answer all those questions, because that will really help them. And then also any other questions, just take in their questions and answer them. A lot of leaders, unfortunately, they kind of, rather than increasing people's understanding, they just try and kind of reassure, you know, pat people on the head metaphorically. No, it'll be fine. You know, no, take in their questions, increase their understanding. The more understanding someone has of a change, the less scary it's going to be. So that's the first lever. The second lever, and this one's interesting, is clarify and reinforce priorities. Because lots of times when there's a big change, people assume, oh my God, everything's going to change. Nothing's going to stay the same, which is almost never true. Even when there's a big change, usually a lot of things are going to stay the same. So if, like, let's say, for instance, that you have a sales force and you're changing the CRM that they use, and they're all going to be like, oh my God, everything's changed. You're like, no, you have the same clients. Your sales targets are the same. We're going to be, you know, if we're arranged in geographic verticals, we'll still arrange in it, just how you record your interactions with them and some of the processes around that, that's what's going to change. So here's how all your priorities are going to stay the same. Here's the one that's going to change. When you do that, it's soothing and reassuring to people, but it also frames it for them so that they can keep moving forward without freaking out, right? So that's super helpful. Then the third one, and this I think is the most interesting one and the one that is sometimes harder for leaders to get their heads around, and this arises out of what you talked about before about dictator change. The third change lever is give control. And what that means is give people as many choices and as much input into the change as you possibly can. And that could be, when is this going to happen? How is this going to happen? How do you think this will affect this part of your work? And therefore, what should we do differently? So just give them as much control as you reasonably can. Don't offer them control that's not that you can't. Right. It's not feasible. But give them as much control as you can. And the reason this is so important is because one of the things that's so uncomfortable for people in organizational change is they feel like they don't have any control. They feel victimized by it, right? It's just coming at them and they're like, you know, helpless. So the more you can give back that control and engage people in the process, the more they're going to feel okay about it and want to move forward. And then the fourth lever, change lever, is give support. And at the beginning, the most important support you can give somebody as you're helping them move through their change arc is just listening to them. I mean, I talked about this a little few minutes ago, but don't try and reassure, don't dismiss, don't try and talk them out of things. Just really listen. Like if someone comes to you and says, out of their worry that it's going to be difficult, costly, and weird, we're going to look like idiots. We're not going to know how to do this. Wow. Yeah, that's going to be hard. We are going to feel like newbies to begin with. Just listen. Just take it in. Just acknowledge it. Because what will happen is if people feel, and we know this as humans, if people feel deeply listened to, then they're ready to move forward. And then you can offer them the other kinds of practical support. Oh, so we have a training, so you won't feel like a newbie for so long. You can learn how to do this. Or here's the new workflow. Let me walk you through it so it doesn't seem so weird. You know, all the other practical support tools you can, but don't wait until they really feel listened to, because then they'll be ready for that, for those other measures of support. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, because psychologically we all want to be heard.
Yes, yes. In fact, there's some wonderful, I think it's Oliver Wendell Holmes said, in the main, people would rather be understood than agreed with.
Right. I think it's what is it Confucius or I don't remember who said, seek to understand before you be understood.
Yes.
So I mean, it makes sense. The problem is, I think that sometimes leaders have a problem getting to, is that they get so focused on achieving a result that they don't take enough time to stop.
Yes.
And emotionally connect and listen. I hate to go back to the beginning of the show again, but the truth of the matter is, when I talk about the emotional piece, that second part of can you tap in and understand the emotions of another is really about truly listening to another person and what they're really saying to you.
Absolutely. And if you're so right, Jay, because what I often, when we're kind of coaching leaders who are in charge of big change, I say, first of all, assume that it's going to take longer than you think it's going to take.
Right.
And second, assume that it's going to fail unless you can help people get on board mentally and emotionally. Just keep that in your mind. It's not about, because no change, I think, has ever failed because, you know, they didn't have some of them, but most changes don't fail because the plans aren't right, or you didn't do your due diligence, or you don't know what your financial goals for the change are. And in fact, there's data that shows this. There's a great statistic that I use all the time from McKinsey, that 70% of organizational change fails on some level. And they say the two main reasons are lack of employee buy-in and management support, which is exactly what we're talking about. So unless you can slow down your forward momentum as a leader and really listen through people's concerns, take them as valid, take them as legitimate. I mean, imagine you're a person in an organization and somebody has just said, okay, we're going to do this huge restructure. You're going to now report to somebody else. And a lot of the systems that you use, processes that you use on a daily basis are going to be different. Mm. Okay. My first reaction is going to be, oh my God, that's going to be hard. And I'm not sure I can do that. And I'm going to look like an idiot, and who's going to help me? And, you know, and if I, as the leader, take that in, not as resistance, not as, oh, these people don't have they're not forward looking. They're normal human beings reacting to this change in a legitimate and normal way, and just listen through their discomfort. Then they'll get to a point where they know I hear them. They know I understand that this is going to be a challenge. And how are we going to do this together? Then they're ready to move forward, right?
But the problem is we're so impatient. We're just so impatient. And matter of fact, you know what Erica does in her book, she actually weaves a story of a jewelry company called Moment in the story. And one of the leaders, the young lady who happens to be the daughter of, it's a family owned jewelry business. She's a little impatient and she gets herself, we got to change now. So she decides to take it on herself and blow everybody out of the water right away with, we got to change because we're going to die. I mean, that's, I don't know how else to say it, but that's kind of what's kind of what came out. And everybody's like, what? But it's really kind of plays to your point. Is that's not the way to handle change, folks, is to let, okay, I admit it, we got problems, but telling if we don't change, we're going to die is not a solution.
Yes, that is not going to help people through that arc. And then you notice in the book, she backs up, she takes on a consultant right. who helps with the
frame. Rachel, then, who's played by Erica, by the way, go ahead.
It takes much longer than Jade wants it to, but it actually happens. And right. all the people that need to buy in and they do it in the way that that works. So you're absolutely right. It's about impatience. Which is back to what I said before, any leader who is in charge of a change, who is managing or driving a change, assume that it will take longer than you think it's going to in order to really make it happen and get adopted. It's just how it works.
Well, anything significant that we want to do is going to take time.
Yeah. Yes. Because you have to. And then the other thing that happens, and this is all part of what we're saying. So Jade, and this always happens with leaders, she'd been thinking about it for a while. She had gone through her own change arc and she was already starting to see, yeah, I can see how this is could be easy or at least doable, how it would be hugely rewarding. In fact, oh my God, the benefits hugely outweigh the cost and we could make it more normal. We could do it. Okay. So she comes to the group and she's already gone through her change arc and she turns to them and somehow expects that magically they're going to have gone through the same process, never having heard about this. And leaders do this all the time. We have weeks or months to think through a change and get through our own change arc. And then we turn to our people and unveil it. And then get surprised and kind of mad when they're not in the same place we are. No, they have to go through their change arc too. That's what you're on the hook as a leader to help them get through that.
I love that. Her name's Erica Anderson. Book is Change from the Inside Out. All right, Erica, where would you like to go next? What do you think we should do? Should we go the fallible leader attributes or should we maybe move on a little bit further to our five-step process? What would you like to do?
Five-step model. I think that'll be
all right.
helpful.
Let's go to the five-step model. So where do we start in our five-step model? We've kind of gone through the change arc.
Wind it back to the beginning. Let's say, okay, there's a change and somebody, usually a fairly senior person in the organization goes, oh my gosh, we really need to change something. There's another example I use in the book of the head of production of a product manufacturing company saying, man, we really got to change our production process for our core product. So then what that person would do is they bring together usually a small team of fairly senior people, which we've come to call the change initiation team, and they think through the first two steps of the model. So the first step of the model is, what is the change? Let's really get clear about what the change actually is, because lots of times organizations roll into a change without being all clear about what it is.
Right.
You know, really get clear about what it is. And let's get clear about why it needs to happen. And you do that by thinking about risks and rewards. You know, what are the risks of making the change, the risks of not making it, the rewards of making it, so that you can come up with a kind of elevator pitch that on behalf of the organization. Now you're just, you in this small group are kind of thinking about it on behalf of the organization. What's the change? Why is it happening? And then the second step is envision the future state. What will it look like when we've made this change? Both aspirationally, like what's our vision, and very practically, what are our measures of success? How will we know when this vision that we're envisioning has come to pass? So you notice that these first two steps that this usually pretty small group are coming up with is exactly what people want to know at the beginning of their change arc. It is those three things in proposed change. What's the change? Why is it happening? What will it look like when it's done? So this small initial team comes up with that. Then they start bringing people into the tent. So usually this small change initiation group, usually a senior group, is not going to be the change team that's going to drive and manage the change through the organization. So they nominate a change team and they bring them into the tent, by taking them through what they've done in the first two steps. So they now know what's the change, why is it happening, you know, what will it look like? And often that change team kind of improves it as they're being brought on board because they're coming from a different level. And also in that third step, you think about, okay, who are the other key stakeholders who aren't either on the change team or on this little senior team? And quite often it's people who aren't on those two teams, but can really block the change. Like in this production process example, they thought, oh my gosh, the chief, this union steward, if she or he isn't on board, that could really block this. So then you figure out who those stakeholders are, where they might be starting from with a change, and how to engage them and get them, get their support.
I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you right here because we're going to take a commercial break. So we're at step three. All right. And then we're going to go back, by the way, folks, we're going to go back and we're going to talk about some details in each one of these steps, because there's some beautiful questions, but we're at stage three. So you've gone through clarify the change and why it's needed, envision the future state, and then building the change. And then we're going to get to step four. I'm not going to tell you that that is. We'll be right back after this. Hey, folks, listen, I got two great sponsors on the show. I've got actually several sponsors, but two of the main sponsors are Epic Physical Therapy and Linda Craft, the Team Realtors. Can I tell you what they both have in common? First of all, they are dedicated to the people. They are dedicated to the people that they work with. And beyond, they serve the community. We were just out there. I was out they were both at a charity running event, and both Linda Craft and team and Epic Physical Therapy were both out there, and they were out there serving water and cheering people on and just serving the community for a great, great, great cause. That's one of the things that they do that makes them really unique and different. They aren't just about their business. They are about serving their local community. Here's the other thing that I know about Epic Physical Therapy and Linda Craft and team Realtors. You get to know the people, right? They aren't some like organizational entity that just exists. They're about their people. There's Heidi and Andrew over at Epic Physical Therapy. There's Linda and her entire team, and they are real people, and they're really people that you want to get to know. They're just so nice to be with. And you know, here's the other thing. They are so dedicated to the people that they serve. It's really amazing to watch how much they care, how they're emotionally invested into every person they work with. Those are the kind of people that you want to work with, because it's more than just, you know, a sale, or it's more than just, you know, making the cash register ring or whatever. It's about the people, and it's about seeing them improve. It's about helping them reach their goals. It's about helping them reach their dreams. That's what Epic Physical Therapy and Linda Craft and team have in common. So listen, if you're looking for a physical therapist, go to Epic Physical Therapy. They will give you epic results, epic recovery, and you can learn more by going to epicpt.com. That's E-P-I-C-P-T.com. But if you're looking in real estate, right, regardless of where you're at, then go to Linda Craft and team Realtors, and you can learn more by going to lindacraft.com, and that's lindacraft.com. Check them out. I really wish you do. And tell them that you heard them on A New Direction. I'm going to tell you, it would mean a bunch to me, and I would appreciate it, and I know they would too. And we're back here on A New Direction, and I am with Erica Anderson, her book, Change from the Inside Out, and we're having a good time. I hope you are, because I'm having a great time with this. This is fun, Erica. And we've gone through the first three steps, build the change. I don't know if you want to add anything more to building the change in step three.
The only thing I want to add to build the change is that once you've kind of brought this next group of people into the tent, the change team and key stakeholders, then really critical work of step three is actually to build the change plan. And those of you in the audience who are project managers, you know that any change, no matter how big and complicated, is a project, and you have to just do it well. You work, you know, work stream breakdown, all that, you know, all the things that project managers know. But a lot of times change isn't dealt with as a project, so there's not a good project plan. There aren't deliverables, there aren't timelines. So doing all that is really, really critical. Then the fourth step, and this is the step that most often does not happen in organizations. Usually, once people plan the change, it's like, okay, let's make the change. The fourth step we call leading the transition, and it's helping people through their mindset shift around the change while you are implementing the change. So the first thing you do is you figure out and this is back to your thing about emotionally understanding other people's emotions, who is going to be most affected by the change? So in this example that we're using about the core production process, it's the people on the line, the people who keep the line going, repair it, and then all the union officials and the HR people, all the people who are going to be most affected are the people closest to the actual change. So you think about, and this is where you bring them in because they know more than you do, how, what's going to be ending for you when we make this change and what's going to be beginning? And that's where you use the four change levers that we talked about earlier to create what we've come to call a transition plan. So you're going to do all these nuts and bolts things to upgrade the production process for this product. And you want to think through what kinds of conversations, what kinds of support, what kind of control, what kind of clarification priorities, what do we need to do for these people who were most affected to help them move from endings to beginnings and be willing and able to make this change? And then once you've figured out the transition plan, specific ones for those who are most affected and kind of general ones for everybody, so they have the information they need, then you implement them together in cadence, the practical plan and the transition plan. So people get the support that they need while the change is being made so that they're willing to go through it. So step four is, I think, the heart of it.
Well, I do too. And I want to stop here for a second because we talk about endings and beginnings of those people who are affected, because we're inevitably, what's going to happen is we're going to make a change and people, of course, as we know, are going to be affected, but we're not thinking about what is about to begin and what has ended. And one of the things that you say here is there are less tangible but really important endings that we're probably not considering, like relationship, right?
Yep.
Because if we make a change in your organization, what relationships are about to end? What new relationships are they going to have to make? And we all know that when I lose a relationship or I'm about to begin a new one, those are pretty stressful events.
Very stressful events. And Jay, this is such a great, I'm so glad you picked up on this, because when you look at the endings and beginnings for those most affected groups, it helps you understand what they're going to think is going to be difficult and costly, right, and weird about this particular change. Because it's one thing to say we generally think changes are going to be difficult, costly, and weird, but it's really hard to help people through that shift unless you know what's that's going to be for them. And what you're talking about specifically is costs. It's going to cost me relationships. It's right. going to cost me my identity. I've done this right. job for 30 years, right?
Right.
So if you can really understand those endings for people and help them through it, help them, you know, how will this create a new identity for you? How will you end these relationships? How can we help you end them well? How can we help you start these new relationships? Once you understand those things that are likely to be most critical for those groups, then you're in a position as a leader and as an organization to help them through it.
You hit on it again, and you said it in the book, and you mentioned again. I don't think people also understand. I don't think leaders are even thinking about this. I know that when I've seen change happen in organizations, I'm sure they haven't. But you said it, the identity. So yeah. We get so tied, our identity gets so tied to not only what we do, but how we have been doing it.
100%.
And then now you're going to change it.
Yeah. It's why, you know, a lot of so let's talk about an industry that's, you know, generally dying in America, the coal industry, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of superficially goes, oh, well, we'll just teach them how to do solar installation or be computer programmers. Well, it may be possible to teach those people those skills, right. But they have an identity yes. that's all connected yes. up with the community. And my grandfather was a coal miner, and I know it's dangerous, but we've gone through it. So unless we help people shift their understanding of their identity and who you will be if you're no longer doing that, that change is not going to be successful.
Yeah, it's so hard. You know, I came from a farming community in the middle of Nebraska. And, you know.
Oh, I'm from Nebraska too.
That's right. You're from Omaha. I forgot all about that. I graduated from Wahoo High School in Wahoo, Nebraska. Yes. Just about
30. I had a great uncle who had a farm just outside of Wahoo.
Really? I may have.
What's that?
What's that?
Press Byers was his name.
Press Byers. Boy, that sounds familiar. Because there was 880 acres I worked on as a farmhand.
Wow.
Right outside, right near Wahoo. So I worked at all those fields out of Wahoo and Ithaca, Nebraska out there. And so, but I remember kids who were on the farm were trying to transition. Farming had been in their blood their whole life.
Yes.
And then they go to college and they're lost. And you would go, well, isn't this what you want to do? It's like, well, what they've known their whole life is they, from the time they were out of, you know, babies, they were working on a farm. Yeah. It's in their blood. It's part of their identity.
Oh, that's such a great example, Jay. And it really is poignant because, okay, leaders, if you really want to create businesses that can change and where the people are change capable and the systems and the structures and the culture, you have to recognize this. You have to recognize that there are critical things that are ending for people with each change that are hard to go through. And unless you help them bring that to their conscious awareness and start to think differently about this, how am I going to have to operate differently? And what will that mean? And how will I think of myself differently? It just isn't going to work. It's deep work change.
It is. And, you know, I'm going to bounce back a little bit because I think part of this change is also, though, is how you develop in stage one, I think it is, how you develop the why.
Yeah.
Because I think that's so critical because if you can help your people, I think you say it this way, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you can help your people have a clarity on their why, not your why. On why this is good.
I love that you picked up on that, Jay, because it's really important. And leaders miss this a lot. And the example I use in the book is, okay, so let's say that you're going to make this change and it's going to make the company much more profitable. Okay, if your compensation is tied to profit or if you have equity in the company, then that's a meaningful why for you. If you're going to make $15 or $20 an hour, no matter how profitable the company is, that's not going to be a compelling why. So think about what the people who are being affected want. Do they want to serve their clients better? Lots of people do. That could be compelling. Do they want to have more time for the higher order tasks that are more fun and interesting and do less administrative stuff? Okay, that might. But just look for those things. And the best way to find them out is to ask, you know, what would be interesting to you? What would be compelling for you?
Mm. There's another piece into this transition piece in stage four. We haven't really talked about it very much. We've mentioned organization, which you define, I think, as really the structure, system structures and culture. And I want to talk about the culture because we all believe that culture is important, yet we really don't really do much about it, even though we say that. But the truth of the matter is when we start to make a change, it can oftentimes affect the culture. We may have to have a culture shift, right? In the same time as we're going through the process of this transition.
Exactly. And so what we always encourage people to do is really think about and bring to their conscious attention their culture. So even if even companies that haven't defined their culture out loud, they have it, you know? Because people, when they come together to do something together in a group or tribal creatures, we tend to come together around values, which sometimes aren't even explicit. But lots of times the values, and they may be implicit, of a company are anti-change. They're actively change impeding. Like, for instance, if you understand that one of your company's values, part of your culture is kind of the way we've always done it, mm-hmm. you know, history. And that's really going to get in the way because every time there's a new change, people are going to be like, oh, that's not the way we've always done it. So when you're thinking about shifting cultures to make them more change capable, you look for values that are related to and kind of consonant with the existing values, but won't get in the way of change. Like, for instance, if there's that value of history and tradition, you might say, well, maybe we can shift that value to stability. Mm. We want to be stable, and we think that stability arises out of tradition. But let's just say stability, because then we can continue to find new levels of stability in new circumstances, right? So you need to think about what the values of your company are and shift them in ways that are still consonant with what's important to people, but will support change. Does that make sense?
No, it makes complete sense. By the way, I love your definition of culture. By the way, Erica's definition on page 61 of culture is patterns of accepted behavior within an organization and the beliefs and values that underlie and reinforce them. That's on page 61 of her book. Oh. It's outstanding. Yeah. All right, before we go, because we're step five,
I'll say it quickly, and it's really important. It's called keep the change going. A lot of times in organizations, even if they do a change pretty well, when they're done, they're like, okay, next. But if you look away, you'll miss a lot of important stuff. And the two things you'll miss are every change, especially big changes, have unintended consequences. And if you don't notice those, then the whole change can fall apart. Like in this production process example I gave, they automated part of the process and it worked well, but then they realized they weren't getting the cycle time improvements that they wanted. And it was because it went automated, sped it up, came back to the people, slowed back down. So they had to make two lines coming out of the automated part of the line. And that's a whole little secondary change that you need to do carefully. And the great thing was they did it based on feedback from the humans who were doing it. So then they felt even more engaged in the second change. So you got to keep your eye on it and see whether or not it's doing what you want it to, this change. And then the other thing in step five is it's a good time to look at exactly what we were just talking about. As you've gone through this change, are there things in your organization, systems and processes or structures or your culture that got in the way of this change that will continue to get in the way of changing? So it's a great time to look at your organization and think about ways to make it more change capable overall so that it's going to be easier to support the changes that are coming because the changes are coming, right?
I think it's called a culture of change capability.
Exactly.
Right, which is what we just created. You've been great. How can people get a hold of you?
They can go to my website, which is ericaanderson.com, or my business's website, which is Proteus, Proteus-international.com. They can find my book on Amazon in hard copy, electric, or audiobook. And I'm on Twitter, @ericaanderson, and LinkedIn, and all those kind of places. So I love to have conversations with people.
Also, I want to just tell you that inside this book, she's got suggestions for change. And go to changefromtheinsideout.com because they have some fabulous resources. I'm going to be putting that on the blog post that's associated with this show. So I will have all those links there so that you can connect with Erica and Change from the Inside Out. Folks, this is the show. Listen, I say it to you every week, right? You're in control of two things, your attitude and your effort. Doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You can't control them. Didn't say it was easy. But you can if you want to. Attitude and effort. Take control of them now. I'll be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. As I say to you every week, you know what that is. Ciao, everybody.
You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places.